XV's log, stardate 60115. You know, that's as much as I've got, and so this is not superhero time, but it is Superhero Time Presents, that one episode of Star Trek. Where, as the title might imply, well, the title really implies we're talking about one specific episode of Star Trek out of all of them. And in a way we are, but it's not that episode of Voyager, which is where the saying originated from. No, but in this podcast we will be talking every episode about one specific Star Trek episode. And this week we're talking about that one episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, Code of Honor, otherwise known as Planet Africa.
Who chose this?
Do what?
Who chose this?
Who do you think chose this?
You, okay.
It's only the worst episode of Next Generation ever filmed.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean...
Nick, it got the director fired.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell because he didn't do anything.
Jonathan Frakes called it a piece of shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen this episode before. I'm pretty sure I blocked it out of my memory.
I've seen this episode many times and just laughed my ass off every time.
And it is like, dreadful.
It is. The direction is like beyond amateurish. It's just like.
Yeah, that's because nobody was doing it for half the episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically some backstory to the whole premise here. Toku was getting a little bit unfun for us this season, so we decided we're going to put our energy into something we can really get behind, which is just ripping into Star Trek episodes that most of us have watched dozens of times over our lives. And you know,
this is going to upset many of our listener,
but do we care?
No, we don't. Have we ever? No,
because like the thing is, we're doing something we enjoy. And that helps us to deliver a better product for others to listen to.
Right. I'm just so glad I had Kung Fury to watch after this.
I still need
all
to watch
all the best
that.
Movies this year have Fury in the title.
I still haven't seen Mad Max yet. Ugh.
If I could slap your goddamn face through Skype right now, I would.
Money! I've been waiting on bonuses. And I had
you can sneak in through the fire escape.
Wait. Hang on. Ken.
Yes.
Now, a movie ticket's about $10 in the afternoon.
Yes.
You need to wait on a bonus to do that?
I had a bunch of stuff come up at the end of the month where I had to pay off, so... yeah.
There's heating and air ducts you could crawl through.
There's Chinese YouTube sites
you could rip the movie from.
I will see it tomorrow.
I mean, you must have a friend with a big coat. Just like...
Hide in it.
Just have your mom put you into her purse like candy.
Now, by purse, he means, of course,
vagina. Yes.
And by candy, he means
Paladin.
You dumb it at Tim Curry there.
So yeah, on this podcast we have Fort Max, Hey Mickey, and Ken. Unfortunately, Paladin couldn't be here because he's trapped in the holodeck somewhere. It's one of those weeks, what can I say?
Barclay's explaining things to him.
Yeah, but now you're making me wish I was there instead of here, because I'd like to have Barclay explain something to me. It sounds like fun. We need to pencil in a Barclay episode as soon as we can, too.
Absolutely.
You mention it.
This episode is proof.
I thought Paladin was on transporter duty.
This episode is
Paladin,
proof.
Paladin
that,
moved
like...
over to the new space station spinoff.
Oh, God. Wait, that would mean he's on a good show.
Not for the first year.
Paladin's on Voyager.
That's never a good show.
No, actually, Voyager was an okay show in the first season because it had an excuse to be that bad.
Yeah.
Like as Star Trek series go, Voyager had a reasonably strong first season compared to Deep Space Nine and Next Generation. It's just that it never advanced from that point.
And it kept using stuff
that
written for Next Generation that...
Oh.
Didn't it keep using stuff originally written for Next Generation for quite a while?
Heck if I know.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Like, I've spent a lot of time looking into, like, background information on Next Generation Deep Space Nine. There's not a lot of that for Voyager online. Kind of a drag, actually.
Kind of.
Imagine, because I made a lot of it without any thought.
I find it hard to disagree with that theory. So, yeah.
Yeah, Mickey... this entire experience proves that Patrick Stewart can only do so much when he has nothing to work with.
Okay, now look, let's be fair here. Like, Patrick Stewart is great, and, you know, he made Picard, but in, like, the first dozen or so episodes of this series, he was not on all cylinders.
No. But then again, the first dozen or so episodes of the series was not on all cylinders as it was either way. He was probably sitting there thinking, the hell am I doing? I'm a Shakespearean trained actor.
The thing is, too, like, I've heard that, like, for the first half of the first season, he was living out of a hotel room because he didn't think it was going to go anywhere.
If with an episode like this, I can't blame him.
I know, right?
Yep.
So now, it was basically a unanimous decision, by which I mean me and Mickey agreed on this, that we do this episode as our first episode of that one episode.
It's fitting for that naming, that naming scheme, actually.
Yeah.
And there's a number of reasons for it. Aside from this episode's general awfulness and its hilarity, is that nobody watches this episode, so nobody remembers it, and nobody talks about it, because they'd rather forget it ever happened.
They skip it on the Blu-rays, on Netflix.
But, I mean, there's actually a comment somewhere about saying that Jonathan Frakes was saying that they tried to get the episode pulled from syndication. They didn't want it to be rerun.
They leave Shades of Grey in there.
He was that embarrassed about it.
They all were.
Yeah.
I mean, can you blame them?
No.
Gene Roddenberry personally fired the director.
Which, like, when I read that for the first time, I thought that was really awesome that he went and just, like, personally, you're done here. You're not working for me anymore.
This is the fourth episode of the series.
Well, no, technically third, because Farpoint was a two-parter. I mean, presented as a two-hour episode.
Yeah, it's considered one episode still.
It depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, it depends on how it aired. Yeah.
We're still in early single digits here either way. And
yeah, it's like the first half dozen episodes.
So, Mickey, even though this was a joint decision, I'm going to put it on you. Take us through the episode.
Okay, let's get a little bit of the backstory of how this episode came to be.
All right. Okay. I like this.
The original person who pitched the story pitched it as more of a samurai culture.
Which kind of explains the part in the second act where they were talking about how they had similarities to a culture everyone admired and then gave them a Chinese artifact as a gift.
At first you're thinking, Africa? And then you're like, oh.
Code of honor.
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the line, the original writer fucked off to... Wait, can we curse in this show?
Yeah, whatever, I don't care.
Okay.
I mean, this is skewing to a different demographic anyway, so, you know.
Anyway, so she fucked up to go write stuff for Stargate SG-1.
That's too early for that, isn't it? SG-1 was until the mid-90s.
SG-1 was like 10 years later.
Okay.
This is the 80s still.
The episode trucked right along through production until the director, Russ Mayberry, got a hold of it and decided... I'm going to cast everybody as Africans for no reason other than my own judgment.
Okay, now, if I remember the things I've read, the script actually did call for Lutan's guards to be African-American in the opening teaser, but nobody else was specifically set that way.
Right.
Look, don't ask too many questions.
That's still problematic at that point.
It is, but like, you know, okay, you can accept that these four individuals on screen, okay, have them be African American and everybody else just cast as best you can for what you need.
If they were attempting for, okay, yeah, I can see what you mean there.
But if you recast the episode with mixed races, you know, different races, whatever, it's not nearly as racist.
Right.
It's still sexist.
Yeah. Oh, it's misogynist.
It's awfully made.
Yeah.
But a lot of the reason why this episode is so horribly embarrassingly racist is because of the actions of the director.
Right.
Yeah.
Who is also rumored to have been mistreating the cast as well, whatever that means.
We can kind of imagine given the context, though.
Yeah, so...
The cast or the guest stars is the question.
You know what's interesting too.
Unclear.
Which I just realized in this. Michael Dorn was not present anywhere in this episode.
He's not.
There's a sufficient lack of Worf.
Yeah.
Because
he wasn't in every episode in the first season, was he?
No,
he was in a lot of them.
No, and of course he is the. He would be a prominent. Protagonist actor of color, so.
And, if Michael Dorn was on set, he would have been the one standing at the tactical station while Tasha was busy being kidnapped. Even if he wasn't really doing much else, his absence in that regard is kind of notable.
It is now, first season, they had a lot more lax approach to bridge roles.
Yeah, I would say so.
Like, oh, no one's manning ops. If Wesley wanders on set, he can take it over, I guess. Nobody really needs to monitor the air systems right now. We're just in space.
Just the vacuum of space, that's all.
On that note, too, in the teaser when they're, pulling up on the planet, look at how much wasted space is on the bridge because of how tight they have those consoles in to the command chairs.
Yeah.
That's just terrible looking.
Yeah.
Well, it's better feng shui. It's more relaxing.
One thing about watching this on Netflix, though, man, I need to get the Blu-rays.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't even bother de-interlacing this thing.
No, they didn't.
You need to get the Blu-rays so you can see this travesty in the highest possible quality it will ever exist in.
Oh, yes. My God.
You know, the only
racism
way...
Racism at 1080p.
The only way this could have been at a higher level of quality is if it was one of the
quality
episodes...
Quality with all caps.
If it was one of the episodes in the special theatrical showing before the Blu-ray set came out.
Oh, man.
Maybe one day we'll get a 4K remaster.
Yeah. So, Fort Max. Now, the kind of film they shot this on, could it be, rescanned at 4K? Would that actually work, or...?
Yeah, it was 35mm film, which is pretty much the only larger film stock is IMAX level.
Well, plus, I imagine having already gone through and remastered everything,
it would be a simple thing to just,
It'd be much easier to upgrade to 4K than
it actually,
than good it's made.
I don't... They may have scanned it in at 4K for all I know.
And
they
then just get your point.
There are some
down,
some releases that, the giant robo OVAs, were scanned in at 4K for the remaster.
Yeah,
so you can
actually
see all the detail in the animation.
Yeah, and I've watched
it's an OVA. It was very well done.
I think the point more is in something live action, there is a lot of detail that gets captured on the film that's you can see that at the higher resolution when it's rescanned. Animation kind of just is what it is, and all you really get to see is the imperfections in the process.
Well, 2D animation, CGI.
CGI is a different thing, but I don't think we're talking about CGI.
And sometimes that can make it worse, though.
Yeah.
If it's Japanese CGI, the clearer it gets, the worse it gets.
Yeah, you need to make that. You need to make that stuff fuzzy to actually make it passable.
Go back and watch episode one
of
Star Wars.
Oh, you should have said Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Gross.
I'd
rather watch Code of Honor.
Given the context and all the various things we're talking about here, when you just say episode one, you have to admit that's kind of a vague.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It's not just me being an asshole and giving you a hard time.
No.
There is a component of that, too, but it's not just that.
Yes, well, there's always a component of that, or else we would not be here.
Yeah, watching Code of Honor.
Right now.
Meanwhile, on Planet Africa, Mickey.
The bad thing is, I watched this late last night.
Me too.
I was I'd been up since 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
My foot was hurting. I took a pain pill. And then at the end of it, I was like, did I just, am I that high? Or, so I rewatched it again this morning. I'm like, nope. I started rewatching.
You watched
it
twice.
I'm not that high.
Oh, you watched it twice?
No. I started to watch it, and I was like, no, okay, I'm good.
Oh, okay. Like Paladin watching Revenge of the Fallen multiple times.
I mean, I have it running in the background now, but that's just for point of reference.
All right, so enough foreplay. Let's get this party started. All right, so the Enterprise has arrived at planet Ligon something 2. Yeah, Ligon 2, that's what it is. Because they possess a magical curing remedy that apparently their backwater planet that doesn't have space travel.
They have transporters.
And, yeah, they got transporters, but apparently they don't have air conditioners or walls in most of their rooms. But they can make an aspirin so powerful it cures herpes.
Chinese herpes at that.
Yeah, Chinese herpes.
Space herpes.
So, Riker, Picard, and Troi hop in the turbolift to go down to the cargo bay where the Ligonians are going to be transporting up with their delegation and the free sample, because the first one's free.
So I have a question at this stage.
Okay.
You're accepting dignitaries from the civilization that you're trying to establish friendly relationships with, right?
Right.
Why are you having them arrive in the garage? Like, this has always been a thing that's confused me with this. You have this entire ship with all these, like, different purpose rooms that never get used for anything else, and you have them come up in the storehouse.
Yep.
Well, I suppose the cargo bay is the only room that has a nice X-shaped spot for them to focus special effects on.
You know, in early viewings of this episode, before I caught the detail, they want to use their own transporter device, where I realized that was just a target, so nobody stood where they were going to beam in. I seriously thought that at that point, they were just putting a sticker on the floor to be their transporter pad for that episode. Which, to be honest, with the rest of this episode, would not surprise me if that had actually ended up being the case.
All right, so the Ligonians beam on board, and it's already fairly questionable.
Yeah, the moment they pop up, you're like, oh my god.
They spent all of $1.37 on fabric.
But that is the shiniest ass fabric.
In 1988 at that.
Well, yeah, all fabric shiny in 1988. 87,
I'm sorry. Even better.
No, but they're seriously dressed like they just went to a drag show in New York. The category is Spaceman Realness. So, Picard introduces his crew, and then introduces Yar, his chief of security. And they're all like,
"What?
A woman?" Oh, it's like, oh god, I know. Oh, god.
That's absurd! Women are for raising children!
Barnacles pop off.
No, that's way too dignified for this episode.
Yeah, this episode has no dignity.
They compose themselves and shove their disgust back in their pants. And so let's get on with the meeting here. Here is the free sample. I'm presenting it to you in a cigar box. And Picard's like, oh, thanks. And Yar's like, out of the way, Captain. This is my job. I'll intercept that package.
She
puts on her sunglasses.
It's like the most awkward. I'm not even sure quite what happened there.
That is some high school play stage line delivery right there.
And acting and movement and action at that.
You know, I'm just like hung up on the cigar box thing, and now I'm imagining that this vaccine that they have is just pot.
Maybe that's what the director had in mind.
Here, just have your dying, your injured, your unwashed masses, have them all smoke this, everything will be cool.
Yeah, so Tasha jumps forward, like she's playing hopscotch and tries to take the box away from the dignitary. And then somehow that turns into her lazily judo rolling him onto the floor.
Because Star Trek.
Not because Star Trek. Because
no, judo rolls are just a typically Star Trek thing.
No, yeah, it's the lazy part.
Well, yeah.
But no. But even for Star Trek, this is bad. We're not even 5 minutes into the episode.
No, so, we're not.
Now, I love how Troy like whispers over to Picard, like, "Don't apologize for that. That shit was awesome."
I mean, I can't argue with her, at least.
In fact, maybe you should go over there and punch one of them in the face.
Send Riker to do it.
Like, I just imagine Troy's kind of drunk in this scene.
No, Riker would not give, like, a straightforward punch. He would clasp his hands together and do, like, the overhead blow feel. Yeah.
And, you know, that's not Troy. That's probably the actress. She read the script and it's like, oh, shit. I gotta flicker myself up for this. We are not going to make it one season.
So, back up in the conference room, we're going to chill out a little bit here. Data enters carrying your grandmother's horse tchotchke, which is their fancy gift they're giving to them. Thanks for the life curing disease. Here's something we got at the dollar store.
And, you know, Troy and Tasha are just kind of chilling out at the back of the room.
Just kind of, yeah, there.
Yeah.
So
they're not really involved. They're just, you know, there. They're set dressing.
So they exchange awkward pleasantries for a while.
And with a really forced round of applause at one point.
Yeah, that round of applause comes across as being aggressive. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I would expect these alien people to be freaked out by, like, you're assaulting us. So eventually Lutan decides, you guys are cool. Guards, you leave. Now, I'd like to see the holodeck. Maybe Tasha can show me.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I like the dialogue in this scene for the completely unintentional subtext. Lutan says something like, something to the effect of, you know, you use it for your training and stuff. And Picard says, and many other things, too.
Perhaps
Riker and Troy could show you.
Are you sure that this subtext is unintentional? Are you absolutely sure?
Well, so that's another thing about season
one. Yes, because this wasn't like a racist thing, so it had to be unintentional.
Okay.
Well, but season one of Next Generation is also bizarrely sexual compared to the rest of the show.
It is, yes.
They're new and bold for the 80s.
Yeah, I think that actually was it.
I think they were trying to push a more sexually progressive society.
Yeah. Where
it wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
I could see that, yeah.
And, like, some echoes of that keep on through the rest of the series, but they do not push that angle nearly as much.
And yeah. Doesn't really show.
I had to really work at not using the word hard there and eliciting giggles.
I think I realized that showing a sexually free society was just really depressing to nerds.
You know what? That's a good point.
So Tasha escorts Lutan and his number two to the holodeck, which someone has thankfully already hollow replicated a nice carpet.
Early holodeck is...
Well, it's a lot like the later holodeck. It just has carpet.
Well, you want to impress the dignitaries by not having a plain tile floor. You want a nice carpet.
Well, what if it's like granite tile? Marble, maybe? That shit's pretty impressive.
Well, Tasha hollow replicates a bathrobe to do some karate in. Because... That is a serious bathrobe. There's nothing resembling a karate gi there.
Right.
No. And that is some serious white belt level stuff she's putting on there.
Uh huh.
Uh huh.
So she replicates her sparring partner, and shows how she can easily throw him to the ground. Perhaps your number two would like to give it a shot. It won't embarrass him at all. I promise. And the result is as telegraphed as his moves were.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also, like, the whole thing, you can create people without a soul?
Oh, God, yes.
10 minutes.
How does this toilet work? Such fanciful machinery you have.
Yeah, they can create a transporter.
Yeah.
Yeah. It.
That's really the sticking. And they made such a point of it, too. Like, they could have just had him beam in and not make, you know, even bring it up.
Yeah, but
they make such a point of it, and yet then they seem. Oh, God.
Yeah, now that you mention it, it's like. They had to be
and considering transporters make a copy and destroy the original.
So,
no, but like now that you mention it, Ken, the whole thing of them using their own transporter had to be put in there just to show that these people have technological sophistication, because nothing else about this episode actually demonstrates that fact.
Which thus it makes everything seem even worse somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like it wasn't bad enough as it was. No.
No, you have to actually harp on the point, and
but see, what it comes across now is more of just that every time they do something that since show they don't understand technology, just makes it seem all the more racist because we've already been proven
right.
They do.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so enough sparring time. Lieutenant and his number two decide, all right, it's time to say goodbye. We'll go back home and get you your cannabis ready or whatever. And by the way, yoink, Tasha's gone. Fooled you.
And like Picard barely even reacts. He's just like,
he does not react. He's like, okay.
He doesn't react. He doesn't react. He turns and faces some barrels and goes red alert.
And
he just stands there motionless while all the extras in the background scatter behind him.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Man.
It's awful.
All right. So back up on the bridge here after I assume it was a commercial break.
Yeah. Yes.
Picard decides, you know what? Let's yell at them and then give them an awesome fireworks display celebrating their victory. So he detonates a bunch of photon torpedoes in the atmosphere, showing, hey, we can't hit you. We can fire blindly at your planet, but you're safe.
I wonder if that planet has a moon. They could have, like, you know, carved their name into the surface with the phasers.
Like Chairface Chippendale?
Yes, Mickey, exactly like Chairface Chippendale. That was the joke.
Well, I had to explain it since, you know, Paladin wasn't here.
Paladin's not here.
So he gets no response. So he says, I'm going to yell at them again. Angrier this time. At which point Troy leans over and says, by the way, Captain, they like patience. Calm the shit down.
After they've launched, you know, weapons of mass destruction.
Why didn't she mention this to begin with?
Instead of just standing there motionless like a statue.
As the gamma radiation fallout rains down on their planet.
Troy, why didn't you tell me this? Sorry, Captain. I'm kind of baked. I sampled their samples.
Why did you tell us this before we blasted holes in their ozone?
Oh, this is the worst. I'm so glad we started with this episode.
There's so much to talk about.
I know.
I hate everything right now.
I know. That's what's so good about it.
And according to Netflix, we still have 32 minutes left in this episode.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
Really? That little? I thought we would still be, you know, around 40.
Shit. It's a 45-minute episode.
So, about this point is where, you know...
Not even 15 minutes in!
This is where the captain should be saying, you know what? Screw this noise. We're just going to beam her out and be on our merry way. Which is why... The Dr. Crusher enters the scene.
Oh, God.
To remind him of, wait, we need these drugs because everyone in the universe is dying right now, and only this backwater planet can make the cure. And
even though they have... So here's a question. They have a sample of it, right?
Right. Yes. Well, she says they can't replicate it. It stops working if you replicate it. But as Fort Max pointed out earlier, it's already been transported, which means they've already replicated it.
This is your own science. Oh, Christ.
Now, let's see. Is this the part where she whines about watching people die, or is that the second scene she shows up at?
It all kind of blurred together because, again,
I'm pretty sure that's the second scene. This is the scene where she says, "Oh, by the way, my son Wesley, he hasn't been in this episode so far, and since it's kind of a bottle episode here on the ship, can he be on the bridge?"
Look, the ship's not doing anything important anyway, so I don't think he can crash us into anything right now. It's not like Troy's driving.
So Picard relents and says, "Wesley, get it here and man ops, because apparently I've left it unattended for this entire scene."
Because, like you said, they're just in space. They don't need anybody to watch the air handling or anything. If you think back to Encounter at Farpoint, also, there was the one point late in the episode where basically there was nobody on the bridge except Picard.
It's like you can just everybody just seems so awkward in this episode. Even the parts that aren't, you know, unbelievably racist or misogynist.
And I think that can be traced back to the entire cast hating the director and not feeling comfortable with anything that was going on around them.
Yeah.
And it shows through their body language that they're not cool with anything happening.
Not a single thing. Not even just like, you know, and this is even considering like the growing pains of season one as it is.
Right.
But these are actors that are pretty good at their job generally. They know how to act.
When they're given something decent to work with, yes.
Yes. But they can only do
it. It feels like we're watching them film pornography. And they don't want to.
But without the porn, which is...
Right. Like, I'm doing what I'm told, but I'm hurting on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even the lifeless android.
Well, he's not so lifeless in these early episodes. That's a thing.
Yeah. You can't tell watching this one.
But everybody's lifeless. Everybody's a lifeless android.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everybody is about like on par with Data.
Yeah,
which is something.
So eventually,
I like the sequence where Picard invites Wesley to man ops, and you know, Geordi turns around, and says, "Sir, have you flipped your shit?"
That's right. Wesley's the like, hell he is.
Wesley's like, the fuck?
Geordi's also hardly in this episode.
At least not in the first half.
He does have a good bit with Data later on, though.
Yeah, in a completely out-of-place scene.
Well, yeah.
It was probably edited from another episode that was running long.
Or they probably shot that second unit because the episode ran short.
Quite possible.
thinking in those terms, that's the only way this actually seems like it could have got in here. Anyway, as you were.
Okay, so Troy and Data and, I don't know, O'Brien decide the best thing for them to do is for Picard to say, "Can we have Tasha Yar back, pretty please, with a cherry on top?" To which Luton responds to and says, "Yes, come down to my Fortress of Doom, and I will hand her back to you, and everything will be groovy. You can trust me."
Totally.
So, at this point, Troy and Tasha have a little powwow with Riker.
No, Troy and Data?
Is it Data? Yes, it is Data.
Tasha's
sorry.
Not there?
You're right, Tasha's not there. It is Data. I just saw the yellow costume.
Now, the way this episode's put together, Tasha very well could have been there.
What, was the yellow costume standing up behind the captain's chair? I mean,
with pale skin, yes.
Yeah. And short hair.
Yeah. If Data had been wearing that skirted uniform, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference at all.
The skorts?
Yeah.
Which sounds like a diarrhea disease, but...
Is there a cat purring on someone's microphone, Fort Max?
Nope, cat's not in here.
Are you purring on the microphone?
No.
Oh.
Are you peeing on the microphone?
Ew.
It's not a no.
That's true, it's not.
Well, anyway, Troy and Data inform Riker, "By the way, Captain's got to go down for this. Sorry."
Look, they'll Riker kill you, but they got to be nice to him.
Yeah. So Riker grumbles, then says, "If you get killed, I'm writing you up." Oh. And then freeze frame and go to credits.
If only.
Can
if
we?
All right, so down on the planet. We're still going through these diplomatic introductions, and it's getting really damn tiring by this point. Lieutenant introduces his space wife, who is dressed appropriately in swathes of shiny fabric. Which I assume they got all the stuff from Farpoint Station before it went up. Remember, Crusher was all about the fabric there. That was probably the fabric center of the galaxy.
Uh-huh. Well, by that point, all the Joanne's fabrics had closed down, so, you know, you had to kind of take what you could get.
Yeah. So, Picard demands to see Troy right away.
Tasha.
Whatever.
Troy's already there with him.
Yes, it's Tasha. Sorry. There's too many teen names, but they should get rid of one of these teen names before the end of the first season.
Oh, they'll never do that.
Nah.
Okay. Picard demands to see Tasha. So, guard pushes Tasha out, and apparently she has stabbed him through the eye with something. Because whatever prosthetic they put on his face is absolutely horrifying.
Yeah. Well, she did say they were showing signs of wear, so I guess she's been beating the shit out of them the whole time.
I just imagine her taking her communicator and, like, stabbing him in the eye and popping it out.
Well, you know, make use of what you have.
Yeah. So, Lieutenant agrees that I will give Yar back to you tonight. At the party.
We're going to smoke a bunch of the vaccine, have some munchies, it'll be cool.
No, it'll be totally rad. We're going to have a juggler and everything. We're going to give everybody sticks to bang together. Because we all know everyone on planet Africa loves sticks. Jesus.
It sounds like it's raining.
So at the big party, Picard makes his big speech saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, diplomacy, thank you. Pretty please give us Tasha Yar back. I will give you a back rub and rub your bunions.
Ew.
And Lieutenant laughs and says, okay, the deal is on. You can have the vaccine, but I'm keeping Tasha as my wife. Cue record scratch. At which point, Lieutenant's wife kind of flips her shit.
Yes.
Rightly so, I mean.
He says this in front of his wife.
Yeah. Then they talk about, like, ancient rituals and, you know, 200 years, and I don't know.
Basically, what it boils down to is that Lieutenant's wife ain't handing none of this shit.
Basically,
so
nobody,
challenging...
nobody on this planet's gotten divorced in 200 years, and she's contesting.
Yes. Contesting by deathmatch.
Yeah.
She's taking off her earrings.
So it's Planet Jerry Springer.
Yes, it is.
Apparently nobody else appreciates a good Jerry Springer reference.
Sorry, I've lost my place here.
We were just at Jerry Springer.
I know, but it's tough to bounce around on Netflix.
Don't you have, like, the Blu-ray set?
I don't have a Blu-ray player on my computer, though.
I guess that would be a problem. Get a longer cord on your headset and you could, like, you know...
Except David's using the TV to play Dragon Age.
That's very inconvenient, Mickey.
David is very inconvenient. As he ignores me.
That's the inconvenient part.
Okay, so after the party, they're back in Tasha's room. And Tasha's like, I can do this. I can kill this bitch.
Did you see what Troy... I did to those guards? I wasn't even trying.
Okay, and this is where the episode goes not only from racist, it also gets really sexist, too. And Troy has I can't believe that Marina could say this line and not flip her shit.
We don't know how many takes this took.
Deanna basically says, I know you've been kidnapped and all, but isn't it kind of hot? Don't you kind of want him? Oh my god. This episode is like one step away of saying from, if she's raped, she really wanted it.
Oh god. Yeah, you're not wrong. Like that's the point where I really had to think, like, maybe I shouldn't have watched this on a painkiller.
I mean,
it's like that's the point you think I had to have imagined that. No.
Right?
I didn't.
No.
This is what, close to 30 years old now?
Yeah.
I'm afraid so, yes.
And even then.
Even then, that's something that you would see, like, seen from 30 years before that, like back in the 50s.
Right.
That's just, it's incredibly embarrassing and awkward and,
Now you see why
especially for Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now you see why Jonathan Frakes was like, can we just, like, get that pulled from everything?
Burn the film.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Burn the tapes. Burn the film used to make the tapes.
Burn the director.
Break the hard drives. It's on now.
Well, Picard says, you know what? I'm going to go talk to Lutan some more. He's like a cool guy. Let's see what he's got to say about this. and Yara sort of sits down and starts sharpening spears or some shit. So, in Lutan's throne room, Picard puts on the greatest lazy performance ever. So what's up with you and Yar? She's a pretty foxy lady, I agree.
It kind of makes my skin crawl, actually.
And this is when Lutan, like, explains his grand scheme here. Of, like, he's got this whole Xanatos gambit going on where if his wife wins, he still stays rich. If Yar wins, he gets to bang Yar.
And he retains ownership of all of his dead wife's stuff.
Right. But
so he stays
banging
rich.
Yar.
Well, yeah. There's a thing in this that kind of does not get a lot of attention and then subsequently gets dropped. When Picard's walking up, Lutan's talking to what's his face, his number two, about, you know, how she must own many lands and many things, obviously referring to Tasha, where he expects, you know, her position, she has a lot of nice shit, and he'll become even richer by marrying her, which is, you know, completely not true, and again, it's a thing that gets dropped almost immediately.
Yeah.
Also, the same could be said for anybody in Starfleet.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's like...
Yeah, remember, the Federation's communist.
At some stage in writing this, on some draft, there had to be a thing where, like, this all went along, and then at some point, Lutan realized, okay, she doesn't actually own anything, I'm not interested anymore. And, like, most of that got cut out, but the one little bit of background dialogue ended up staying in there, and now it's just, like, this one little thing.
It's an artifact.
It's an artifact that actually makes the story of the episode a little more interesting, but also disappears immediately after it's presented.
Yeah. And then they randomly cut to Geordi and Data because we need at least one positive person of color in this episode.
Oh, man, I wonder if that's it. Like, they added that one scene after they fired the director. Just like, please, do something. Make this look better.
Yes. Everybody likes Geordi.
He's on Reading Rainbow. Kids love him.
Yeah. Not untrue. I mean.
And to be fair, this is a fun scene.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Geordi's just sitting there shaving, and Data is aggressively being unfunny at him.
I love this shaver.
Yes, it's a piece of blue glycerin. Possibly with a little light in the handle.
You know, I mean, points to, you know, LeVar Burton. He does kind of sell it.
Yeah. Yes, as he's shaving with a completely smooth face. Well, you know, he's blind. He can't see how much growth he has.
That makes it even more impressive.
Well, he just doesn't know how, when he's done. He just keeps going. There's some weeks he's done to the bone.
He doesn't have his boxer on. Can we just talk about this entire scene just for the rest of the episode?
It feels like it goes on long enough at some point.
So I feel like as Data is telling him this joke, he's aggressively walking towards him like he's about to stab him.
Well, Data knows from his previous experience doing this, okay, if I don't corner him, he's going to run away whether he can see or not.
Like, he can still hear me, you know?
Yeah.
Finally, if I get too close.
Well, if he couldn't, there'd be no point in trying to be funny at him.
Well, to be fair, there still was no point trying to be funny at him.
And then they leave. Then they leave, and we're back to the episode.
But before we jump to the Data Geordi thing, you left out the part where Picard goes to Maximum Sleaze, and once he figures out the whole culture of the planet from one line of dialogue, I'll make Tasha fight your wife.
God, yes.
Hard.
I have a plan. Oh, wait, did I say that out loud?
In the direction of this episode, it wouldn't surprise me.
Disappointed.
Disappointed!
All right, so Picard calls down Data and Geordi from their humor training therapy sessions to the planet to inspect the weapons to see if they are sharp. They deduce that, yes, they are sharp.
Also, they're not cleaned very well.
Also poison.
Oh, and there's the like brilliant line in here. The weapons are surprisingly flexible and light, almost as if they were made for women to use.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, God.
They're specifically designed not to chip their nails.
Because, you see, women are small and weak and can't handle a full-size weapon.
I hate everything.
I can't decide if the woman this episode hates black people, women, or the audience most of all.
I think it's like a culmination of all of them in one perfect storm of bullshit.
I mean, if you put together the black people in the audience and the women in the audience, that makes up the majority of the audience.
Yeah.
So, like, you can kind of hit all of those things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, the black women get hit the most.
Oh.
Oh, Portman.
It's true, though.
Mickey, please help.
Well, speaking of the black women in the show, Troy has invited Mrs. Lutan up for a little heart-to-heart, trying to convince her,
Tasha,
don't
Tasha,
do this,
Tasha.
I will kill the shit out of you.
It was Tasha, not Troy.
Whatever. I don't care. This episode's awful. I don't want to learn anything about it. Yes, Tasha. Tasha's going to kill this lady. And she's like, I'm going to kill you back. She's going to go get her whale.
Do not compare the two, please.
I shouldn't, because Lily's awesome, and
Lily
Mrs.
is
Lutan
awesome.
Is not.
Yeah, don't silly first contact.
Also, Mrs. Lutan's name is Yarina.
I'm not going to remember that. I can't remember Tasha's name.
She's a main character. That'll be there for the entire series.
Uh-huh. Hey, she was there in the finale. That means she's there for the entire series, right?
Oh, shit. Right? I don't think it works that way. Okay, just move on.
Also, Tasha has this line, on my planet, it's a greater honor to refuse. Considering the planet she comes from, I think she didn't get to finish her sentence, and it's a greater honor to refuse being raped. I'm not sure how that applies to this situation in particular, but, you know.
Well, you know.
She has to work with the life experiences. She has to work with the life experiences she had.
How could you not love him?
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about this episode without feeling bad.
Because, you know, in case any of our listeners didn't know this already, Tasha Yar came from a completely failed colony.
There were rape gangs.
Thank you. True. I wasn't sure which one of you were going to get to that first.
Yeah. Like, that's not a... That makes this even worse. That makes this even worse.
Assume here is that when the director got fired and they had to re-chop up the episode to make it work, they cut out the scene where she mentioned that, because she doesn't talk about her completely failed colony all episode long.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm sure it was filmed at some point.
Probably. Or is at least in the it was in the same draft of the script as how she doesn't own anything because she's a woman in Starfleet.
Yeah.
Just in Starfleet, but...
I'm trying to keep it in the theme of the episode, or the spirit of the episode, Ken.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah.
All things told, that probably how it would be phrased in this episode, though.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get ready for Thunderdome.
Oh.
Can we just get beyond Thunderdome?
Okay, well, the answer is no, we can't get beyond Thunderdome. So Picard's asking Data what can these sticks be made into, and he says they can be made into a big stick, or two sticks.
Or maybe even a square.
Very helpful, Data, thank you.
I also, like, you know, he says if assembled end-to-end, they would make a pole 44 meters high, or two of 22. Picard can't do basic math.
It's about the time room service shows up with a bunch of hats for Tasha to try on.
I thought they looked more like big shoe boxes.
Anyway, so she gets to choose which weapon she likes to use for the battle, I guess.
Well, they said she may choose her size, so presumably it was, you know, all the same thing suited for different, like, watch sizes, glove sizes.
So she opens up the first box and pulls out a puppet from the Dark Crystal. So what happened to these small, thin, light weapons they had for women?
Yeah.
So let's just dip their fists in molten lead and roll it around in nails.
Cool.
Which, admittedly, is kind of awesome looking. Like, if I wanted to beat someone to death, there's a chunk of metal that looked brutal. That's the weapon I would choose.
Yeah.
All right, so, as they look out the hotel window at the Thunderdome, we see Mrs. Lutan doing her jazzercise routine as neon lights shine up into the sky.
Her jazzercise of murder.
Her jazzercise of
You
doom.
Can practically hear the theme song to Fame playing. She's not going to live forever.
Fame!
You know, I love the commitment we have to jokes sometimes. Oh, also, watch out. Those neon lights are hot. They totally set that piece of paper on fire.
Oh, yeah. They totally did.
Yeah.
All right. So, it's time for Star Trek is Raw. So we've got a Stone Cold Tasha Yar.
No. It's time for Trek is Wrecked.
Oh.
Trek is Wrecked. Oh, that's good.
So Tasha enters wearing her Hulkamania headband, which keeps her hair out of her eyes, which really isn't long enough to be in her eyes in the first place.
And isn't really holding her hair back
anyway. She
looks
so stupid holding that thing.
She does, but admittedly, each one of those little nails has got covered in poison, wouldn't you be holding it very away from you at all times? Like, I would not actually let it just brush up against my leg while I was walking.
I love how her opponent that walks out with, like, this gold robe.
Yes, because she is come under the management of Don King.
Oh, it's about the age for that, yeah?
That was actually going to be what I was referencing when I was interrupting you, so it all worked out in the end.
Yes, good.
So, let's have a terrible fight sequence.
Oh my god, it's so bad!
It is moving in slow motion, and it makes William Shatner look like a karate master.
You mean William Shatner's stunt actor?
No, William Shatner.
William Shatner. I don't know, even, you know, 60 Shatner, but... No, let's say...
You would think when you stage a fight on a jungle gym, you could have, like, some mobility, some creativity in the choreography. Not this episode.
No.
It's like you probably get better stuff out of T.J. Hooker right now. I mean.
At least T.J. Hooker has guns.
Yeah.
All right, they start the match by saying, the match is starting, nothing's going to stop it now. Okay, so then Urena loses her weapon, throws it into the crowd.
Guy just kind of casually catches it.
And Lieutenant's like, hold the phone, stop the match. Let's get her weapon back.
What?
It's like, dude, this is a death match.
That's when Tasha goes in for the kill.
Right.
Should be. Mm-hmm.
So the match does not stop unless somebody drops the weapon, then we stop it.
Yeah.
And I love that she threw her mitt into the dude, and it kills the shit out of him, and nobody seems to care.
Well, he didn't seem to care at first either. And then he just kind of looked at him, oh, I'm bleeding. Dead. Uh-huh.
You think even Picard or like Troy would be like,
acting!
No, they're like, huh, okay, well, fuck these assholes.
To be honest, I would be kind of like that too.
But as Tasha gains the upper hand, number two, Lieutenant number two, exclaims, no, the person I'm in love with.
Huh?
Out of nowhere, because apparently this is a new subplot and that he loves.
And, you know, then Luton just kind of giving him a side eye. The fuck you say?
With 5 minutes left in the episode.
Because we need a resolution and we need it fast.
Mine is a minute for credit, so, you know, 4 minutes left in the episode.
Well, Mrs. Luton takes a killing blow.
Which to the shoulder. Tasha,
yeah. Tasha throws herself on top of her, and they beam away back up to the Enterprise.
Killing blow barely grazes her.
and then the best line when they rematerialize, she's getting cold already. It's literally been 10 seconds.
Yeah.
It's literally been 10 seconds. She's been fighting, and obviously her temperature is going to be raised from that. She is not getting cold already. This is just bullshit.
And we're podcasting with somebody who should know.
That's true.
Yes.
And actually, yes, Buddy's looking to warm up after death, too.
Fort Max, your expert opinion on this.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Thank you, Fort Max. Exactly what I meant.
Perfect.
So they teleport up to the transporter room, where thankfully Crusher is waiting to say, I'm a doctor, get out of the way.
Well, not before Riker is, you know, pointing at them still mid-materialization and going, Crusher, get up there. What are you standing around for?
Direction!
Uh-huh.
I have to be useful in this scene.
Yes. Because he sure hasn't been any other point in this episode. Like his main contribution to this, besides his oh-so-witty remark about writing up Picard if he gets hurt down on the surface.
Doesn't even get to step over chairs funny.
No, he just kind of, you know, wanders around the bridge recording logs and, you know, making Wesley sit at ops, which he's neglected to man again.
That's
all he's done this whole episode. Of course, from Frakes' perspective, I'm sure the less he was involved, the better it is.
Yeah.
Probably. So, back on the planet, Luton is flipping his shit.
It does say something, though, that he was barely involved in the episode, and yet, yeah, he's like, please destroy this.
No, Luton's not flipping his shit yet. He's, like, all super pleased with himself.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, the match is resolved, and Picard's promised, well, if Tasha wants to claim, you know, marriage to you, she totally can. And then Picard kidnapped him in reverse.
Oh.
Yeah.
So he takes Luton another tour through the Enterprise, you know, up to the bridge.
It is funny, though, considering they were like, oh, but the Prime Directive at one point in the episode.
Oh, yes, I skipped all over the most ham-fisted explanation of the Prime Directive's importance.
Yeah.
Which the dialogue never actually finishes on any of the multiple times it starts on it.
Yeah.
This would be so much easier without the Prime Directive that prevents us from, you know, fighting back when we're kidnapped.
We'll just kidnap them in reverse. Screw it.
Anyway, so Picard takes Lieutenant number two into the conference room where, oh, surprise! There's his wife, still alive.
Now he flips his shit.
Yeah, he's kind of pissed. And so is she.
Mm-hmm.
And so, through a technicality, since she technically died, they were no longer married. Therefore, he had no more right to her shit.
And, you know, Luton protests this whole thing, and Crusher's got the best line of the whole episode. If you doubt the effectiveness of your poison, here, test it out, as she jabs the thing toward him.
The one good line of this episode.
Yeah.
But so then Yarlena's like, okay, well, I love number two, so I'm going to marry him. And, Lieutenant, you can be my number two.
First, she offers him to Tasha.
Nope.
No.
And Tasha's like, I'd like to ride that, but you're kind of an asshole.
There'd be complications. You're not robot enough.
So yeah, there's the whole romantic subplot resolved when she marries the number two and then keeps her original husband that tried to kill her on as a lover.
Sure.
Because I guess this is a polyamorous society all of a sudden that they never mentioned before.
That would have.
Okay, so like they kind of implied that because they called Urena Luton's first one, which implies that he has additional numbers besides her.
It could, but you can imply it as, you know, this is the person I choose first over all others.
That's certainly another angle to take it from.
Also, was it already speaking kind of stupid? I mean,
well, yeah, yep. Okay.
You're analyzing something that shit to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, and then, formerly number two, who I guess now is number one, you may have the advantage in technological matters, but not in civilized behavior.
Is that supposed to be a joke?
as everybody is just kind of like, you know, glancing back and forth at each other. Is he serious?
wondering if he was talking in character or talking or a jab at the script or the director.
What director? They don't have a director anymore. I believe the director got fired mid-episode, though. So yep. By that point, they didn't have a director anymore.
Nope. We don't know what order they shot stuff in.
I suppose.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Planet Africa.
Plus, you know, another awkward instance of Wesley on the Bridge.
Yeah.
Also known as Season 1.
Yeah, yeah. And Season 2 and about half of Season 3.
And then he left the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then retroactively, everyone decided they love Will Wheaton.
Will Wheaton, not Wesley Crusher. There's a difference.
Yeah, I was there at conventions in the first years of Next Generation. I remember one of the highest applauses at the costume contest was someone came out dressed as Wesley Crusher. And someone from Mad Max comes out and explains, no, I'm not Wesley Crusher. I'm a Wesley Crusher. And there was thunderous applause, like a standing ovation.
But yeah, that was, oh, you know what? We forgot the, like, make it line of the episode where Luton says, a code of honor protects one like a magic cloak. that was kind of important and we forgot it. It kind of got lost in all the Picard sleaze, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, like, when I think of this episode, that's the first thing that pops in my head, that one line. Because it basically
After stuff like, holy crap, this is racist.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, that's kind of like an example of the...
Yeah.
Not just the racism, just the whole cultural perception of this planet. Like, besides the racist casting, just, like, the way they're playing this society is really summed up in that one sentence. Yeah, this is a terrible episode. This is a terrible episode. I feel bad for the actors having been involved, and the director who shot it this way should feel bad. The writers who worked on it should feel bad. And I don't think it should have been struck from syndication and home video and everything, but I sure don't blame them for feeling that way.
This is an awful episode that I wish never existed. However, I love watching it because it is hilariously awful. It strikes that sweet spot of doing just as much wrong as it does right. It's awful in all the right entertaining ways.
Oh, okay.
It's offensive. It's inept. It's stupid.
It's brilliant.
It's a disaster piece. It's like watching Fun Pub on TV.
I mean, yes.
I can't deny I always eagerly watched this episode when it came up in the syndication cycle just because of how hilariously bad it is. Like, there is no point to this. Yeah, you might be like facepalming or cringing, but you're also kind of laughing at the same time.
Because Jesus Christ, how did this get made?
Yeah, it's that whole like disbelief laugh where you've exceeded all reason and all you can do is just, you know, embrace the absurdity of it. So yeah, it is like watching FunPub on TV.
Fort Max, how do you feel about it?
How did this series get a second season?
Yeah. Yeah. That's about how I feel, honestly.
How did the series get out of its initial 13-episode order? Like, that's your question to ask, not how they got the second season.
Yeah.
Because the back half of the first season is pretty good.
How did it finish the first season is the question.
That'll do it for this one episode of Star Trek. Come back next week. We'll be talking about Defiant from Deep Space Nine Season 3.